Welcome to episode 160 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Bomb Queen by Jimmy Robinson. And now, the cast begins.
Lucia and my mom are trying to get Lucas to go upstairs, but he's sliding across the floor on his butt instead of walking.
Wait, what?
He's sliding across the floor on his butt.
Honestly, I've thought about doing that at your place, too.
Like, he's sitting on the floor, and he's pushing himself along with his hands.
Yeah. I thought about doing that while I was there for my bachelor party. When we were doing the automotive dynamics test?
Oh, yeah, that was great.
I was like, man, I know the best way to get back to the kitchen. Slide on my butt.
Well, I mean, by the time we were playing Cards Against Humanity, I was just lying on the floor at that point.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
It was great. I felt great.
That was a good party. Thanks again.
Oh yeah, I had a lot of fun.
That was like perfect. I love the tests. And I love them all like coming out of crevices in the kitchen when I first showed up. I was trying to keep a straight face, but it was really fucking awesome.
Mitch and I like came up with that like an hour before you got there. The tests.
Hey, whatever works, man. I'm okay. This monitor is overkill.
Is it the giant one?
Yes, it's my 40-inch TV that I'm using as a monitor.
Dang.
As part of my 3-monitor display.
Dang.
Jealous.
It's like I'm sitting in a cockpit, except if I'm looking at the screen on the right, I literally cannot see the one on the left. I have to turn my head to use my computer now.
That's awesome.
We have a term for that in my home, and it is Terrorist Command Center.
Oh, fuck. That's definitely what I have. I'll take a picture later.
Oh, Andy, I was going to ask you, have you seen Doom 2?
No.
The video? The computer game?
Like Dhoom, the Bollywood movie that's
Oh, no.
I did see Doom 3 is coming out soon.
I know, it's in
the
theaters.
There, when I was there, I saw Gravity in the theater there, and there was a preview for Doom 3, and I was literally giggling like the entire trailer.
So,
what is this about?
It's basically Indian Fast and the Furious.
Oh, man.
It's like way better. Because there's less plot.
I think Doom 2 is on Netflix. You need to watch, like, the first 10 minutes. It's just... It's so absurd that it's insanely awesome.
Yeah. And Bollywood, like, Bollywood action movies, they don't give a fuck.
It is the best thing ever.
Like, there's... My favorite clip is from Singham. It's about a cop who retires to Goa. Which is, like, a little resort area of India. And there's one of my favorite scenes. It's like the cop and the person he's pursuing in the car are moving at different speeds. Like, they have different laws of physics for the cop. Just to make the scene work the way the director's imagining it.
That's the one where he shoots at the car and the tire blows out. And then
as
the car's going over him, he takes the guy out of the car, right?
Oh, yes. I've seen that clip.
That is from Singham. And
nice.
That's what we'll probably watch tomorrow night. We're going to either watch that or
Robot. DVD? Oh, I want to watch Robot so bad. I've seen clips of it. It looks amazing. Well, I want to watch Singham too, but
Robot is like a Bollywood Terminator.
God damn it. It's got another fucking Eevee.
Oh, man.
Are you excited for Pokemon Game Night?
Oh, yeah.
Mitch is really not excited, which is great.
I started going... Brandon sent the link to Bulbapedia, and I've been looking at the deck list of every single one on there to figure out which one I've made, which one I want. And so I made a separate list. I was like, I'm going to write down the ones I want. I think I've gone through maybe 40% of the ones on the list.
Yeah.
And let me see, how many potential ones do I want? 1, 2, 3. I have 11 on my list of potentials so far. I was hoping to have, like, one or two, but there's just so many. And I picked all the ones that come with an Eevee variation are on my list.
Is there one that comes with a Magikarp? I really want to do that one.
Yeah, there's some Gyarados ones.
Nice.
It's
like
called.
I like me some water Pokemon.
It's called Raging Sea. That's the one you want, Andy.
I've always liked Blastoise. So like I'm down for water Pokemons.
The Raging Sea deck. Let me see. It's on Amazon. They have it for $22 on Amazon.
Fuck, I can pay for that. That's fine. I just got all that wedding money.
Well, dude, I'm telling you, go to Toys R Us. They had a shitload of Pokemon cards. A shitload.
All right, I'm going to have to do that. By the way, Jen, before I need to tell you now before we send out thank you cards. Thank you guys for your gift.
No problem. Also, I really want you to spend at least some of that money on a Pokemon deck. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to now.
Okay. All right,
it will give me the greatest happiness.
Cool, good. Okay, I'll do that. Hey, and then it'll also go to buying X-Wing minis.
Andy.
Yeah?
We didn't get you a gift yet.
No, you got me plenty of a gift.
I did?
Yeah. Like what? The whole fucking bachelor party.
Oh, yeah, but...
And all the... Look, dude, it's expensive being a bachelor, being a groomsman. It's worse being, like, a co-best man.
Well, I mean, I'll get you guys some placemats or something.
No, that's exactly why we didn't have a registry.
Oh, yeah, you didn't have a registry.
We were looking through Amazon, and we were like, we already have all of this shit.
Dude, J-Money had a Think Geek registry.
Yeah, we thought about doing that, too. But, like, well, we did it, and then she said, okay, go ahead and add stuff you wanted. And I added, because I'm like, there's the stuff I want, and then there's the stuff I can't rationalize buying for myself. And the stuff I can't rationalize is the stuff I put on there. So we had, like, Star Wars toilet paper and, like, the marshmallow blaster. And so she was like, this is not our wedding registry. We're not doing this.
I got some, the thing I got for J-Money and Megan was from ThinkGeek.
Nice.
Because their other registries, like, a lot of people had bought stuff from there. And I was like, they made this ThinkGeek one because they wanted stuff from it. So I'm going to make it a point to get them something from there.
There you go.
That's a good idea.
Good thinking.
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
So yeah, Andy, the one you want is Raging Sea.
Alright. Dude, we have not published an episode since Christmas Day. Also, why the fuck was I working publishing an episode on Christmas Day?
Because you are dedicated.
What the fuck was I doing? I'm not that dedicated. It's been a week and a half. 2 weeks and a half. Whatever. Ready?
Yep.
Alright, everybody, welcome to another bomb episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast.
Is it Da Bomb, Andy?
Da Bomb. This episode's gonna be Da Bomb.
Da Bomb.
Fuck, 1998, guys. My name's Andy. I'm hanging out with David.
Sup?
Jen.
Hey.
I was hoping for like a word, dog.
Sorry, all I got is hey.
It's okay. It's fine. This week we're reading Bomb Queen, written by Jimmy Robinson. It collects Bomb Queen number 1 through number 4, published by Shadowline. The title of the trade is Woman of Mass Destruction. And before we get into this, I want to apologize to everybody for the, I think it's 2.5-3 week hiatus we've been on. I got married, there was Christmas, there was New Year's. Jen was in a different country. So, I hope you'll forgive us.
Did you really forget your phone in Puerto Rico?
I think it got stolen.
Ah.
It disappeared between the rental car and airport security. Whoops.
Well, welcome back. There's comics here.
Comics.
So, I don't know about you guys, but I read this like 3 weeks ago, and I skimmed it again today. And when I was skimming it, I was remembering how hard I laughed while I was reading it.
It's very funny.
You know what moment... Yeah, I feel... You know what moment made me laugh the hardest? Is the first time that you get a full panel of Ace Justice standing there, and there's a whole lot of man meat in this spandex.
I cracked up so hard when I saw that.
Have you ever read the Boys, like later trades? I remember we read the Boys once.
Yeah, we did read it. Yeah, and I read on like 5 trades in.
There's a character called I think his name is Love Sausage. He's a Russian superhero, and his is bigger than Ace Justice.
Nice.
Well, I think the reason why it's you can see it in that shot is because because there's shots of him earlier where you can see his crotch area, and he doesn't. You can't see anything, but then later, Bomb Queen grabs his crotch.
Yep.
And then the next time you see his crotch, you can see his wiener.
I was wondering what word you
were. So he has like a chub, half chub. Or maybe it's a full one, and it's just constricted by the
clothing.
Yeah, and I mean, like, even they call it out, right, in the last panel of the playground, the school battle.
Yeah.
Even the camera, like, we're supposed to be seeing him from the news camera's point of view, and he even says, guys, I'm up here. So, you know.
Yeah.
He does say that. And Bomb Queen consistently laments that she won't be able to ride that.
It took me, the news camera saying that too, to like actually notice. I did a double take and was like, oh man, I probably laughed for a good minute straight.
So this is in our cheesecake arc, but it makes me think we should do like a comedy arc. Because this was, I mean, there's cheesecake in it. It's not like cheesecake, though. There's just boobs in this. But they're not like, it's so hard to call anything cheesecake after reading Tarot. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Like, this is in the mature reader section, for obvious reasons. I mean, we're just talking about a big wiener. And, you know, she's like at least half naked in half of these. But it doesn't feel necessarily gratuitous. It feels like it's a joke, but it's not ever meant to turn anybody on.
Yeah, I feel like it's meant to provoke in a different way, like shocking you. Every time her boobs come out, I think they're meant to be shocking, like, oh my god, they're showing this in a comic. And because of that, it feels more like satire than cheesecake. I also don't think we're supposed to necessarily like Bomb Queen in that way. Like, she's a good foil for the funny bad things people do, but I don't know if we're necessarily supposed to sympathize with her in like a real way or feel attracted.
Yeah, and I think the comic actively works against you sexualizing her, right? Because she gets to a position where she's like talking to the mayor, right? And she's being intensely aggressive sexually. And I mean, that turns on a certain number of people. But I feel like that's specifically meant to push you away from her, looking at her that way. Like, it would be violent. you might have a really good orgasm, or you might get your face blown up kind of way. So it, like, immediately pushes that aspect of the character away from the reader. And then later on, when they're fighting, and the boobs are coming out because the shirt fell apart, like, then it just feels natural.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, I was going to make that observation as well. The only time we see her boobs is because she's gotten damaged in the course of fighting somebody. I mean, she's wearing skimpy clothing, but
yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. It's kind of hard to sell because it's definitely walking a line, and there are certainly people who. I'm sure there are people who buy this for the same reason that they would buy, like, Tarot or something.
See, I feel like... Okay, I'm going to really earn that explicit tab. I feel like if I were a teenage boy, it would be much easier to fap to Witchblade than to this.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But I think this is not the fantasy, right? This is not the idea of the female who succumbs to male power. It breaks down into two things. Like, she's a bully. She's aggressive. She's sexually aggressive, which, as you said earlier, works for some people, but is not necessarily the thing that sells a lot. I mean, in culture at large, we see a lot of submissive female sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we're kind of told that's more natural, that's more acceptable. And then, second, she's a psychopath in her come-ons. It's not just... Like, I feel like Tarot was also a little sexually aggressive, but in a very acceptable way. She would, you know, think to herself, oh, Skeleton Man is really hot. But she didn't threaten anybody. She didn't damage anybody. Like, she didn't...
And she waited for her mom's approval.
Yeah, she did that. But she never made you think that, you know, you might walk out of that encounter with one fewer nut. Or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it, did you guys like Bomb Queen as a character? Like, as a person, was she interesting to read?
Yes. I read the afterwards for, like, each of the comics in the individual issues. And in the first one, the author basically says, like, it was going to be really hard to create a character that's just a villain. Because how do you do that without making some sort of redemption story, without making them likable, etc.? And he's like, well, Bomb Queen is my take on that. And I don't think... I don't think that she is likable, and I don't think she's necessarily redeemable. So it's more like mayhem and fun from that.
But, I mean, she's the protagonist of the comic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we supposed to be sympathetic to her in any form? I mean, I feel like as a protagonist, almost by definition, we're supposed to feel some kind of sympathy or we're supposed to be on her side, at least as far as the story's progression goes.
I think that's where the author did something really clever by making the citizens of Newport completely reprehensible. Because even if you're not, like, rooting for the things Bomb Queen supports, you can, A, say that she is, like, supporting the people's wishes, and B, maybe they deserve her.
Well, it reminds me a lot about the, there's this big thing in the field of psychiatry and psychology called contextuality, in that you can, if you go downtown and there's a guy with schizophrenia walking down the street talking to random people and claiming that he speaks to God, you diagnose him with schizophrenia. But if you go to a tribe in South America in some secluded area of the rainforest where they don't interact with the outside world very much, and there's a person walking around speaking in tongues and claiming he talks to God, in that town, or in that little village, that guy is the oracle. He's the town oracle. He's not crazy. He's fulfilling a role in his society that makes him productive, right? And so in that context, you can't call him crazy. You can't diagnose him with schizophrenia. He is a productive member of that society. And there's a really good example in film, which is going to be really interesting to tie into Bomb Queen. Take Willy Wonka, for instance, right? Willy Wonka is certifiably schizophrenic, except he's made one move, gotten really, really rich, and then he built a factory in which his schizophrenia makes sense. So long as he never leaves the factory, his schizophrenia is totally productive. It's totally contextually fitting, right? And Bomb Queen, as fucked up and psychopathic as she is, she's been in control of this city long enough that she has shaped the city into the kind of place where she belongs. And people who think like her go to because they feel they belong there too. So it's like, it's not just the town deserves her, but she's made the town into a thing that like, she's not out of place there at all. It makes perfect sense that she's the queen here. Look at, there's crime zones. There's, like, sex stores next to the school.
Well, but it's, I get the impression that she shaped the town or the city to fit her, her ideas. I mean, I guess it's a good thing that there's crime zones separated from the rest of, like, quote-unquote clean society or whatever you want to call it. But those didn't exist before Bomb Queen. It's not like the people had set that up and then she was like, oh, I like the way this place is set up. I want to be in charge. I mean, she's a supervillain, right? There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one can assume that she conquered the city, right? And then set it up the way she wanted. So did these criminals who live in the crime zones, did they move into the city because she set them up? Or were they already there and she just made a place for them to go and now they're there?
I think it's probably part and part. You know, if you're a crazy psychopath and you want to feel safe in America, you would go to this town and you would live near one of the crime zones. And if ever you had like a bout of extra crazy, just waltz into a crime zone during a crime hour and do your crazy and then move on with your life. So it's probably both. It's probably she made people here a little crazy, and then the crazy people come here for her.
Mm-hmm.
But she definitely did conquer it, right? It says that in the beginning. That's just like the premise for the story, is there were the four queens.
Yeah.
And they took the city together, and then one by one they betrayed her because they saw the light, and she took them all out. Which I think is awesome.
She's the evilest.
Well, and she is evil, but she's not like maniacal. She's not like the Joker or anything, right? Like, she's still kind of smart. She wants to hold the city. She wants to control the city. And she knows that if she makes all of the people completely hate her, she will lose control of the city. So she has to kind of work this balancing act, right? Because she makes the crime zones seem completely insane, except then when she fights Ace Justice at the school, the city starts to turn against her and says, why are you going and do this at a school, Bomb Queen? This is what we have the crime zones for, right? Isn't this why you have a crime zone? So she kind of makes rules to help her control the city the way she wants to control it, but then she also has to be held to her own standards to a certain amount.
Well, I mean, she has to play by the rules she's set up, right?
Yeah. I mean, ostensibly.
There are consequences for her breaking her own rules. I mean, the consequences are different for her than they are for a normal citizen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people complain. Yeah, they storm her house, exactly. So, you know, that kind of makes me wonder what kind of government do you think, what would we call this form of government that she has? Is it a tyranny like Dr. Doom or something?
I don't think so. Because it's actually really interesting how she knows how vulnerable her position is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear that, you know, she says, if I don't clear my name, they're going to get me out of here. She's not going to murder every single person in town to rule over like nothing. So she acknowledges that this is, in a way, some sort of crazy violent democracy, except it seems like your vote is, well, I don't know, democracy goes off a premise that you're not murdering people and people in power didn't just seize it by, like, killing other people.
Yeah.
But it does kind of work along those lines where they grant her the power and then she does things to keep them happy in return.
Well, and the interesting thing is that there are government positions below her that are democratically elected.
Like,
I mean,
mayor.
They have an election, right, for the mayor. So, I mean, what power does the mayor actually hold? I guess that's up to the mayor because the mayor's name is. Not Mayor Woods, because he's the candidate, right?
Yeah.
The other guy. He is a total pushover when it comes to Bomb Queen, right?
But that keeps him alive.
Yeah, it keeps him alive. Now, would he actually be voted in if there was a real election with real competition? I don't know. I mean, Woods shoots himself in the foot, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which you kind of saw coming. At first, when they were calling people out, I didn't expect him to bring in an outside hero. What ended up happening in the end is what I had thought he was going to do when he made that first phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's talking about, we need a hero here, we need a hero. Like, I thought he was going to go for it directly. But his play, I think, was even smarter, because that way he kind of wins either way. Right? If Ace Justice beats Bomb Queen, then he wins. If Bomb Queen kills Ace Justice, then he has a martyr. That was a nice, smart play on his part. He just overdid it.
Yeah.
Well, she was smart, too, in the way she dealt with him after she realized what was going on. And the position that he put her in by making the fight at the school. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, she definitely knows what she's doing when it comes to keeping her hold on the city.
Yeah.
That is the thing I like about her. She is chaotic evil, but intelligent. And that's not a trope you see too often. I mean, she kind of just does evil for evil's sake, for the fun of it. But she is also calculating. She's capable of assessing a situation and then acting on that in a reasonable fashion. Which is actually kind of sad, too, because you get the impression that if she were a good person, she'd be a really good ruler.
But, I mean, is she a bad ruler? I think to a certain degree she is, because she allows bad things to happen, right? I mean, there's still crime. I think if you would have like the best ruler, they would make a utopia, a sustainable utopia, right? But she doesn't do that. She allows bad things to happen, but you know, it's controlled and it's limited to the people who want to be in that situation by choice, right?
And it's the will of the people too, it seems. It's not like Gotham where everyone's like, oh, criminals are so bad and only Batman's here to save us and we're sad people. They're like, yeah, we like the crime zones, it makes sense. And you know, Bomb Queen's okay, she has a high approval rating until Ace Justice dies,
you know. And you're you're talking about like the crime zones and how they were having that debate about them, and that was one of my favorite parts of this comic, when the people start to question Bomb Queen and they do the reporter on the streets kind of thing. Because of course you think, well, yeah, the idea of crime zones is terrible, right? An area of the city and a time of day where you can go and commit any crime you want, and if you walk through it, it's your own fault, right? And at first it seems just totally wrong, and then they do the like person on the street, and some of the people are saying like, well, what were you even doing there? You had to know that was going to happen when you were there, right? And that is something you hear people say in real life here, right? Like you, like I remember last year or something, or 2 years ago, some girl was walking home from the bars, like walking back to her dorm at San Jose State University from a bar downtown, which is about a 6-block walk, maybe a little bit more than that, actually. And she was walking home by herself at 2:30 in the morning, and she got mugged and raped, right? And what's surprising is the thing I heard people say a lot was what did she expect? People were saying, like, of course that was going to happen. You walk home down the dark alley in the middle of the night. And not a word about how she was dressed or she was asking for it. None of those things that I think get, you know, none of those things. It's just like you're walking home at dark in the middle of the night. What, in a downtown for a large city, what did you think was going to happen? And it was notable because this is abnormal in San Jose. There are not that many homicides here, especially not in the downtown area, or even instances of violent crime like that. So, like, it's funny because in this, you get the crime zones that you think, of course, are completely evil. And then you realize in the real world, there's kind of people kind of conceptualize crime zones and have them in their mind. Like downtown at 2 a.m., that's a crime zone.
See, the difference is, though, right, that there, chances are when you go to downtown, this quote-unquote crime zone in real life, you're going to be okay, chances are, right? Mm-hmm. If you go to the crime zone in Newport City, you're definitely going to at least witness crime.
Yeah, at least witness.
Yeah. You know, you bring up a really good point, though, Andy, because in the comic, I was inclined to originally say, like, well, people are happy, whatever. But then you say this real life example, and my, you know, we hear this sort of thing all the time in like rape cases and such. And my first thing that I always think about that is, no matter who you are, no matter what walk of life, your gender, your sexual preference, your religion, whatever, you have an inalienable right to not have your body violated, whether that be like assault or rape or murder or anything like a slavery. It's your right to not have those things happen to you. And then if you carry that over into the crime zone idea, I don't necessarily think that a human loses their right to safe bodily safety by entering a crime zone. So maybe if we're following the Gen philosophy here, that actually does make them pretty bad, because that's what you're saying. You're saying if you enter a crime zone, you might get some crime.
And yeah, you're just like you say, you're giving up your right to bodily safety.
Well, we don't actually know if there
is some kind of... We don't know the details of crime zones.
Is there some kind of police presence in there? I mean...
Well, we know there's, like, child prostitution.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
For instance. So yeah. That's problematic.
That was so cliche and terrible, but I could not help but laugh when that happened with the reporter.
You know, that one and the kid with the freaking NAMBLA t-shirt. both made me shake my head, because that's the point where I was like, okay, this is just getting ham-handed in its message.
Wait, there was a kid with a NAMBLA t-shirt?
I don't recall that.
So, there's all these people watching news reports in their homes and reacting to Ace Justice, and there were two instances in frames right next to each other. One was, like, this naked couple watching the TV, and then the guy's like, oh, blah, 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 Ace Justice, and the girl goes, Dad, that's not nice, and it's supposed to be incesty and disturbing.
Oh, yeah, I do remember.
And in the frame, like, I think right above that, it's a kid in a NAMBLA t-shirt. I was just like, oh, man, that is just overboard.
But you know what, though? I have to say, all of this is funny in the reprehensible kind of way, but I do want to give Jimmy Robinson a lot of credit for giving Newport City a really special feel. It's a unique feeling for a city, and it's consistent the entire comic. And it's established in the first episode when you get the two-page spread of Newport City, and there's a thing in the back of, like, a naked woman saying, I don't sleep with anybody who doesn't drink Glug. It's like a soda ad. There's, like, kids walking around. There's a Guns R Us and a sex toy shop with, like, a fucking kid hanging out up front. And it's like, from that point on, you know what Newport City is. And, like, in Newport City, of course there would be a kid wearing a NAMBLA t-shirt. Of course there would be a weird incesty thing. Like, of course all of this stuff would be in Newport City. You're right. It's in those details that you really get a feeling for this town and that it stays consistent and stays entertaining the entire time. It's to the point where I think, like, the main character of the story is Bomb Queen, of course, and the antagonist is, what's Mr. Woods? What's his first name?
Robert.
Robert Woods.
Because I was really upset because it should have been Richard, so his nickname was Dick.
Dick Woods.
You know it should have been.
Yeah.
They got it wrong.
You know what, though? The best Dick joke name is the owner of the New York Jets. You know what his name is?
What?
Woody Johnson.
Oh.
Not even fucking nice. Kidding you.
So unfortunate. Nice.
Woody Johnson. But anyways, like, you have the antagonist and the protagonist, and I feel like the third main character in this story is Newport City. I feel like Newport City is as much a character and as important to this to the telling of this story as, like, Gotham City is to some Batman tales.
Oh my god, you know what this is? Do you remember that horrible Frank Miller comic that we read? The one where, like, Superman and Wonder Woman get it on in a really creepy way.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Yeah, and it had all the talking heads and the people around the city, like, being extremely crass and vulgar and giving their uneducated opinions. This is that done right.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Exactly.
I like that. That's nice. That's good.
This is what he was going for. I think he was going a little bit more darky and a little bit less wacky, but fucking, yeah, spot on.
I think wacky serves well here because it tempers the blow. So, I mean, I was laughing throughout a lot of this comic, but then it got me thinking about a lot of things. Like, you know, there's huge talk about legalizing drugs, and then it becomes, well, something is only criminal when you make it a crime. So what's moral, what's not? How do we make a functioning society around that? And this actually makes, or it made me at least, think about those issues and how they fit in into, like, more extremes, where we need to draw lines, how we want to structure our own society around crime. And I think that's really impressive for a comic about a sociopath that likes to blow things up and have lots of crazy sex. Like, not bad.
Yeah, I gotta say, like, considering you put this in a cheesecake arc, I am simultaneously the most disappointed and the most surprised by this.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed because I was looking for a little bit more tarot action for the cheesecake arc. But, like, seriously, this is actually, I kind of want to read more of this. This is pretty good, all things considered. There's instances in this where I go, huh, you, like, for the comic with this tone, you're punching above, what's the phrase, punching above your weight class?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you're punching above your weight class, but you're pulling it off. Like,
well, it's pretty good. It's very funny, but it's also pretty, it's a pretty intelligent comic.
Yeah. It's really surprising. So what did you guys think of Robert Woods as an antagonist?
I think he was just the right amount of villain for Bomb Queen, because I don't think he was evil. He was trying really hard to do a good thing, and I don't think he ever meant to hurt anyone, including Ace Justice.
Well, see, here's the funny thing, right? You said he's the right amount of villain, but he isn't a villain at all, right?
No, and he wants to be the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's an antagonist, and it's... And see, that's like earlier when I said, do we feel sympathetic for Bomb Queen? And I think I do, but not because I think that she's a good person or anything, or she's doing the right thing. It's because it's clear she's clearly the protagonist and he's clearly the antagonist. And I want her to succeed or win because she's the protagonist, not because I think she's the good guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I agree with Jen that he was a good antagonist for her. And I think it was good because, you know, this is a superhero comic, if you have to put it in a genre. And I think it's good that we didn't see her go up against, like, her arch nemesis right from the get-go. You know what I mean? I think it was a good starting point because putting this on the backdrop of a mayoral election gave us the opportunity to see the city. And like you said, Andy, the city is a character just like Gotham City would be. And so, him being the antagonist was a good choice because it gave a good setting for us to be introduced to Bomb Queen.
Yeah.
I don't know if I really answered your question about
it. No, you did. You basically said he's not a villain. And he's not a villain because she's obviously a villain. But as a foil to her, he's definitely a very good character in that he, just as much as she is psychopathic, he wants to be a paragon. He wants to be the person who comes in and saves Newport. And wants to give children their schools back and take away the crime zones and stop the incest. He wants to be that guy. He wants to be the good guy so much that he's willing to make sacrifices. And that's when he makes a switch into being the antagonist. Because if it wasn't for that little switch, then you would be rooting for him, I think. Because there's that switch with Ace Justice, right? Where... Like, okay, makes sense. And then for some reason, it's like in a back alley, he pays Ace Justice. Which I understand for Ace's point of view why you would want to put that in the back alley, that he's getting paid to do his superhero thing he's just supposed to do out of the goodness of his heart. But like, for Robert Woods, it's in the back alley because he doesn't want to be connected in case Ace dies. And you kind of figure that out in the next the next issue when he does die. That Robert Woods was kind of counting for that contingency. And that's when you realize, okay, this guy was a good guy until he realized it was okay to sacrifice his superhero. And then when he gets superpowers himself, he completely crosses the line. And he's doing the thing that not even Bomb Queen does. He's just recklessly fighting and like throwing people who are like throwing cars that have people in them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Bomb Queen, as much as she's a psychopath, knows that if she just lets them die, that her city's going to turn on her. Like, to a certain degree, she knows that she can't play by those rules. Even though she could have before, if she does now, she's kind of fucked. The city will rise up on her. I think by the same line, there's also times when, as a reader, you kind of lean towards her side, but the comic does a really good job of pulling you back away. Right? Like, my favorite instance of that is when you're in the stadium during the rally. And you're starting to think they're coming for her house. There's this, there's that. No, they're not coming for her house yet then. She's just kind of in a catch-22. She's kind of fucked either way. And you're starting to sympathize with the position she's in. And then Ace Justice tries to kick her out. And she has to start a fight. And then she just wantonly murders a bunch of people in the arena who start to try to charge on her. And you're like, oh, she just fucking murdered a bunch of people, including women and children. Just because... they didn't like her. And, like, it does a really good job of pulling you back away from her The same way with Robert Woods. Whenever you start to think he's going to be a good guy, they pull you back away by reminding you that he let Ace Justice be a martyr, and he knew it was going to happen. Well, he didn't know it was going to happen, but he was perfectly okay with letting it happen.
Yeah. Oh, man, the worst thing, too, is he... Wasn't it Ace Justice's mom was going through cancer treatment she couldn't afford?
Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
So he kind of, like, possibly effectively killed two people.
That's true. Oh, God, I forgot about that.
Man, that's actually pretty dark.
So, who... This is kind of something we've been talking about the last couple episodes. Who is the audience for this? Because when I think about comics that we've read previously that are kind of like this, I think about the pro.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the same kind of like wacky, cartoony feel to it. But this is like way more violent and has a lot more morality in it and maybe less jokes. I don't know. It's probably about the same level of jokes. No, less jokes, because in the pro, the Superman satire character shoots an airplane down with his cum. So I think that one wins. This is a little bit less jokey.
I think if you want to compare it with the pro is playing straight to be humor. It's clearly a humorous comic. This has a... Superficially, it's a comedy book, but there, like you said, there's more morality. There's some kind of, there is a level of, there's a message in this comic, but you really have to, I think you don't notice it at first. You know what I mean? And I think that's usually a good thing because it entertains you and also says something intelligent.
Yeah, that's what good satire always does. You laugh and laugh and laugh until you realize you learned a lesson.
Yeah.
So who is the audience for this then? Is this like, because this isn't, I don't know, is this general audience? Is this just adult readers? Any adult reader?
Well, I mean, it's definitely intended for adult readers. I mean, even more so than the fact that it says mature audiences on the cover. Yeah. I mean, what am I trying to say? The lens that you view these lessons through is for adults. Mm. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's for people who are not easily offended and stomach this sort of thing well, because I can think of plenty of people who enjoy satire, but would not like this. Like, it'd be way too much for them. I don't know. I actually kind of feel like this comic is targeted towards people like me, meaning someone who... you know, likes their humor very dark.
Yeah.
And this is actually a bit too dark for me. There were things that I thought crossed the line, which made the comic inelegant. But, oh, I do enjoy the humor drawn from, like, taboo subjects.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's definitely not... I think it's specifically for people who are already comic book readers. Like, my wife has read a small handful of comics, mostly Batman, because she likes detective shows and stuff. She would be abhorred if I gave her this.
Well, okay, let me ask you guys this. So this is clearly satire with hyperbole heavily involved in it. I mean, right?
Yeah.
So I think the most famous, like, example of satirical hyperbole is probably A Modest Proposal by Jonathan Swift.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Yeah.
So considering the time and when Modest Proposal is published and when this is published, do you think these are similar? I mean, Modest Proposal doesn't have boobies in it, but it's about eating babies. How do you think those stack up as satire, these two things?
Sorry, I'm still laughing at the way you said boobies in it.
Well, see, I think Modest Proposal has the benefit of being more elegant. It comes across as, like, totally deadpan. You know, it seems like a mm-hmm. real suggestion at the time, and a lot of people took it at that, and it inspired horror. I think there are parts of this that are just so extreme that they cross over from being horrifying into being like, really? And I think that removes some of the effect. So I would say, yeah, it's absolutely in the same vein. This is a little more ham-handed.
Yeah. And I wasn't, for the listeners out there, I wasn't trying to say that this is on the same literary level as Jonathan Swift. I just think it, you know, when I think of a satire, this, like, Modest Proposal is the first thing that comes to mind, because it's like the perfect example of satire.
God, that shows how uncultured I am.
Have you never read that?
No, I have, but the first thing that comes to my mind is The Pro. And not even because we just thought about it. Whenever I think about the word satire, I think about The Pro. But I also think that this isn't completely less elegant. I think it's elegant for somebody who is a comic book reader and somebody who's a little bit savvy about the comic book genre. Because you look at things like in issue 4, when she's fighting and her shirt gets blown off and she spends the rest of the fight with her boobs hanging out, it's not just gratuitous, I don't think. I think that's the author making a commentary about what should really happen in most comics. Right? Like, forget about female characters, but how many times does Superman get shot with bullets in the chest? And I get why he doesn't get damaged, but, you know, he's just wearing spandex. Like, there should be a hole in the spandex where it ricocheted. It should tear. Right? And for Christ's sakes, this is Bomb Queen. Okay, let's say she can survive a bomb because she has some kind of weird bomb power, but, like, her fucking shirt will be blown apart, you know? And so you look at, like, even that little piece of commentary about comic books and the way characters fight and how physics kind of don't work sometimes when maybe they should. And not just in the, oh, look, I can fly kind of way, but in the, that's cotton. And I know what cotton is. And cotton should be on fire right now kind of a way. Like, it's not just fantasy. That's a thing that really exists. And why the fuck did it not get torn off?
Well, that's something that, you know, that's something that occurs often in comics. I've been reading a little bit of an aside. I've been reading this comic called Supreme Power, which is a Marvel comic based that's like a more realistic version of the Squadron Supreme. And one of the things that the government has to do when they're making their superhero is they consider, like, is his costume going to be able to stand up to just him flying at like sonic, you know, faster than the speed of sound. So yeah, I mean, that is something that, I mean, maybe we don't, it doesn't come up in Superman because nobody cares, right?
Yeah.
But it is something, in, you know, that would happen. Physics exists. Maybe physics don't exist in the world where Superman can just fly because he's solar powered.
You know, I was going to bring up another example, and then you said because nobody cares, and then it made me laugh even more about my other example. Because my other example is World's Finest, the new 52 reboot of Earth 2 with Power Girl.
And Huntress, right?
And when Power Girl got her new 52 costume, it's fucking terrible, right? And I think the author and the artist didn't like it either. It was a costume change that was handed down from editorial, I believe. And so every issue, almost, Power Girl gets punched or shot or had a bomb explode near her chest. And somehow the boob window comes back.
Really?
Excellent.
From the uniform tearing. And it's like, okay. So that's why I had to laugh when you said nobody cares about Superman's costume. Apparently a lot of people care about Power Girl's costume, especially that area of it.
Well, I mean, if you really think about it, wouldn't her boob window be aerodynamically detrimental?
Yeah, right. There's
the air would go in there. The air would fly in as she's flying.
Yeah, it's a ram scoop.
And then it would just inflate. Like, her boobs would just fall out because
it turns her cleavage into a ram scoop.
Can we take a moment to talk about Starfire's costume? Because really?
Okay, but
how much super glue is on her nipples?
Jen, I can write I can write that one off because it could be alien material of some kind.
Isn't that something that came up with Superman too? Yes, like alien. Didn't Ma Kent make Superman's costume out of the stuff that was in the fabric?
Oh, maybe. Jen.
But see, then that leads to another question, is like, how do Earth needles how are they able to sew Kryptonian tech, like, cloth when bullets can't penetrate it, right? I mean, okay. You could dig this. You could just keep going down this hole.
Wait. No, Jen. Okay. Okay. I know. Oh, no. Okay. I know how Starfire's costume works. I know it.
How?
Okay. Picture New 52 Starfire's costume, right? Where just, okay. Like, the little bit that comes out the back and covers, like, just the nipple. Right? You picturing it in your head?
Yes.
Remember the late 90s, those slap bracelets?
The costume's made of slap bracelets?
It's two giant ones crisscrossing right over the titties.
I think you broke me. Oh, man.
See, but we can't make slap bracelets that big because it doesn't work. But if you have alien special material, you can make giant titty covering slap bracelets.
That would not be fun to put on.
I imagine not.
Somebody just slaps you across the boob and it's on.
I imagine it sounds a little painful too. But like, okay, so we can get that kind of stuff. But like I don't know, even Huntress, like shit got blown up all the time. Why does it always, like, it's always so carefully exploded? Every time. Like, especially that Power Girl example, right? I picked that one because it's like every issue, her costume gets blown up in the exact same place. Alright, so you figure...
Well, it's her forwardmost point on her body, right? It's going to get the blast first. So you got to imagine if she knows a bomb's going to blow up, she's going to be trying to move away from it. Right. Your boobies will still be the closest.
I'm just saying, you have 10 issues, it happens 10 times. 1 in 10, it's going to blow up a little bit more, right? And I think that's what Bomb Queen is trying to say in the 4th issue. Like, okay, that one blew up right in front of me. And Bomb Queen, of course, isn't going to stop fighting. She's not going to slow down. She doesn't have magic slap bracelet uniform to come on after her main uniform explodes. She's going to keep going. She's going to keep fighting, and she's going to be out there. And that's all it's going to be. Aside from the fact that she does webcam shows and stuff, too. Which I found funny when I was reading, because it's like, okay, just add one more thing on. But, like, I think Jimmy Robinson's trying to do a little bit of a commentary on that trend in Cape comics. And it's like it's a little thing in the comic. It's just a little thing, but I appreciated it, so I wanted to bring it up.
That's legit.
Yep.
If I ever make an intro, or not an intro, if I ever make a promo, like a 30-second promo for this, I'm just going to have it be 30 seconds of Jen laughing.
I am still trying so hard not to laugh.
Every time you see that now, you're going to think about the slap bracelets.
I am dying.
So were there any other characters in this comic? I feel like it was just those three. I mean there's other people, right? Like the mayor. But the mayor is a stock character, isn't he? Is there anybody else in this character who's dynamic at all?
Not really.
No.
It's a tiny cast.
Yeah. But I gotta say, it's also I kind of forgot this because it's been like 2 or 3 weeks since I read it. But this is also 4 issues. This is a short little trade. And I think it's a short little efficient little trade. Packs a lot into it. It's a good little story.
So one thing I wanted to ask, since we're kind of talking about characters, you get, at least I seem to recall that Mr. Wood, whatever we want to call him, he seemed to mention that the U.S. government seems to allow her to continue to run.
Yeah, like they kind of just look the other way for everything.
In the notes, somebody asked, what's the culpability of the citizens of Newport City? What's the culpability of the U.S. government for allowing this to happen?
I think that's a little bit, I don't know, for me that's an instance where the commentary got a little bit too heavy-handed. About the only thing that matters is money, because I think they say more than once that the reason that she gets away with it is because her city is so productive and makes so much money that they're willing to look the other way. And like I don't know if I think that would actually ever happen. I think that's of all the things in here, that's where I have to, like, make the biggest leap of faith. Because that's where I think the satire goes a bit too far for me. But that is in the comic, I think, why it happens. Which kind of makes sense. If it's the one city in the entire country where drugs and gambling and everything like that are legal, it's like Vegas on steroids, right? I mean, Vegas is a pretty damn tax lucrative city. Imagine Vegas on steroids. That's basically mm-hmm. what this is going to be. What about you, Jen?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I actually didn't think too much about the culpability of the government. Maybe that has something to do with, like, just being jaded about politicians. I don't know. Like, I feel like the focus was so much more on the people, and the author didn't encourage me to think about the government too much. It was maybe mentioned twice, whereas we get all this filler with people talking about crime zones and child prostitution and murder and drugs and such, and that felt far more, like, more flavorful. But yeah, I feel like they didn't fill it out here, so they should either do that, like, in the next volume or just leave the issue. But yeah. If they're going to address it, they need to do it wholly.
I think it probably... I imagine it's something that would get addressed eventually.
Yeah, they almost have to. That's kind of... It's too big of a dangling loose end. Or, like, isn't there some version of a Justice League? Like, that's the other thing that I kept thinking about in this one. Like, I think Ace Justice is kind of a really generic type of hero. He's got the strength and the flight and all. But he doesn't exhibit any specific powers that make you think he's a parody of a particular hero. So the way that heroes work in this world is kind of ambiguous at this point. But I feel like in every Cape comic I read, there's a team up, at least. There's at least a duo. And there's usually a group or a league of some kind or an assembly. I don't know. What are the Avengers? They're just, the assembly.
They assemble.
Yeah. There's an assembly of Avengers. There's got to be a group here somewhere. And I'm interested to know why they haven't stopped this. Like, maybe she does some under the table hand jobs. I don't know. Well, that was not literally underneath the table, but, you know.
Or maybe literally.
It could be.
You don't know.
So what did you guys think of the art in this one?
It actually reminded me a little tiny bit of Amanda Connor. That is her name, right?
Yes, it
I, like,
is.
Like, blanked for a moment, freaked out.
No, you got it.
It has that kind of gleeful cartoonishness and good attention to detail. But I don't think it's as polished.
Yeah.
But I do like that it's not in this super serious 2000s comic vibe that we see a lot. Because that might have turned it a little more towards, like, a comic that takes itself too seriously. Whereas this, it reflected the tone well. It wasn't super goofy, but it was light.
Yes. I really have nothing else to say, but I completely agree with that. I think it's a perfect tone for this comic. This is one of those instances where it matches really, really, really well. Yeah. That's, like, all I got. Is there any panel that sticks out in your mind other than the Ace Justice Johnson panel?
No, that's the one that sticks out in my mind the most.
That sticks out quite far.
Oh, the trauma. The one that sticks out in my mind the most is that two-page spread when you first see Newport City. And mm-hmm. I think it's because, like you say, Jen, there's so much attention to detail. Like, the stop sign says, no standing, no sex. The street lights have, like, the red, yellow, green. And then instead of having, like, stop and go, it has run and walk. As if, fuck it, you're going to jaywalk anyway, just walk out in the middle of traffic, who gives a shit? Like, it's all these little details that only make sense in Newport City. But because they only make sense in Newport City, when they all come together, it gives you a really good image of what Newport City's like. That page really stuck out in my mind. I think you just muted. Good call. I don't have anything else more to say about this one. Do you, Jen?
I'm all out of words.
Okay.
Those were all my words.
All right, I'm guessing David's ready to rate it.
I only have numbers now.
All right, David, what number you got?
Dang it. You know, I think I'm the one who put this on the list. I think we had something else instead of Bomb Queen. But this is something that has always piqued my curiosity on the shelf. And I definitely like this one. I thought this was a fun comic to read. It had, you know, it was fun, and it had it. And surprisingly, so far this has been the least cheesecakey comic, and I think it's because it seems to have something to say. You know, Tarot certainly did not. and Witchblade just felt so 90s and in the worst way. You know, I don't remember what I gave those comics. I think maybe it's been so long since we recorded an episode. I think I gave them threes. This comic, I'm gonna give this a 4.5. I really liked this comic. Nice. And not because it was cheesecakey, but I had high hopes for it because it was something I was curious about and I thought I would enjoy it. And turns out I was right. It was something I enjoyed and it was fun to read. And it wasn't. There was more to it than just what was on the surface. This is certainly one of those cases where you can't judge a book by its cover, you know, to be cliche. Is this the best comic I've ever read? Certainly not. But, you know, these ratings are our opinions, and I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a fun comic. So, yeah, I'm going to give it a... Definitely going to go with that that 4.5.
Were you trying to remember the score there at the end?
Yes.
All right, what about you, Jen?
I'm going to give it a 4 because I actually really enjoyed this. I think that in trying to be super offensive, it actually became less offensive, which is one of those interesting paradoxes of hyperbole. And it just became so absurd. It was funny. I laughed a lot. And it pointed out all the little things, as you said, that happen with Cape, or I guess I should say don't happen with Cape comics, like, you know, wardrobe being blown up, or freaking Ace Justice and his crotch scene. I saw that, and after laughing for a minute straight, I was like, you know, that never happens to Superman, but he only ever wears spandex.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just like, that's an unfortunate fact of life when you wear very tight-fitting clothing. Weird things show. So I think it added that sense of, you know, why don't we have this kind of realism in the other things that we read, which led to other questions, like how do we deal with a populace accepting crime in their city? How do you deal with a corrupt form of government when everyone's actually okay with it in a lot of ways? Mm. And I found it amazing that something like this could be so thought-provoking. I thought that it was a bit too much at times, like, you know, dial it back, you're trying too hard. And I'm going to keep reading this because I'm excited to see if there's a bit more refinement that comes with it, you know, not being so heavy on the message in places, because frankly, the best comics are the ones that allow readers to figure out what's going on for themselves in a lot of ways, because, you know, it's just more concise, and then the reader gets that sense of, aha, I'm so smart. And those are both nice things. So, yeah, 4. I thought this was great. It was hilarious.
Oh, crap. I was going to give it a 3.5. When I started asking you guys what numbers and... I was going to give it a 3.5, but now I think I'm going to... I think I got to go with a 4. I think... You know, I think I have to go with a 4, not because of everything you guys said. Certainly that all is weighing in. But I think I have to go with a 4 because it gave that good of an impression, and we were able to talk about it this much for a comic that's that like is ostensibly supposed to be just not flippant, but satire and fun and wacky, but there's layers to it that we are able to peel away and enjoy. And all of that we were able to do with a comic that is 4 issues long. Like, I bumped it. I was going to give it a 3.5, and I'm giving it a 4 because of all the things you guys just said happened in 4 issues. Like, that's what blows my mind about this, is that it was so concise and efficient with its satire and its storytelling and its moral interweaving and all this kind of stuff. And sure, this is not a comic I'm going to recommend to any random person. I feel like I can only recommend this to a person who is in the comic, like in the comic reading groups. But if there's somebody who does read a lot of comics, who would get some of the in-jokes that are in this, who would get some of the little moments of giggly satire, then they're going to enjoy the shit out of this. And for only 4 issues, it's fucking great. For 4 issues. So I'm definitely nailing it at a 4. Nailing it. So that wraps up Bomb Queen. Next week, we are going to finish up our Cheesecake series. We're going to read Jungle Girl. And I honestly have no fucking clue what Jungle Girl is. I just know that it is drawn by Frank Cho. And there are a handful of people in the industry today who are known for how they draw women. And unfortunately, we couldn't get an Adam Hughes book in here. But Frank Cho is known for how he draws women. So I don't feel like we could leave him out of a Cheesecake arc. We kind of have to put some Frank Cho in there. So we're going to read Jungle Girl issues. What are we going to do?
0 to 5.
We're going to read issues 0 to 5 that were published in 2007 by Dynamite Entertainment. That's an important distinction because the only collection I could find for this was an omnibus that also collects a 2008 run numbered 1 to 5. But we're going to do the 0 to 5 from 2008. You can buy the omnibus if you want. You can go out and find the singles. The omnibus, honestly, is pretty cheap, and I hear it's like good paper, nice hardcover. Might actually be worth buying if you think you might like a little bit of cheesecake on your shelf. So that's what we're going to read. Hardcover. Yeah, hardcover.
So can't let the listeners forget we're doing Cheesecake.
Yeah, that is definitely. Oh, you could have almost forgotten this week, but hopefully next week we get right back in that cheesecakey mood. And then after that, we're going to do, I don't know if it's going to be a regular series or a mega series or a super series. It depends on how many issues we're going to do or how many comics we're going to do. But after this, we're going to do our best of 2013, which I think is going to start to be an annual thing. At the beginning of the year, we're going to do the best of the previous year. So if you have a suggestion for our best comic of 2013. It could be any trade that came out. It could be like the 13th volume of Green Lantern. If you thought that was the best thing that came out, fucking email it to us. Let us know. Send us an email at www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. And before you send us an email, though, go to our website and check and make sure we haven't done it before. What's our web address, guys?
Our web address or our email?
Our web address. I just did our email. Didn't I?
No, I was. I thought you just said our web address. Anyways, our web address is atomicpoweredsupercast.com.
This is what happens when we take a couple weeks of break. I fuck up the outro. David stops paying attention. You can also let us know on the social media, facebook.com/apsupercast, twitter.com/apsupercast, or apsupercast.tumblr.com. Any one of those methods of getting a hold of us, let us know what you think your favorite comic of 2013 was. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I finished.